Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, September 16th, 2020. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Board Hires Experienced Interim Superintendent. Ann Dixon comes to MIST with lengthy resume, by Stuart Doreen. Experience doesn't appear to be an issue with Midland ISD's interim superintendent. That is what Ann Dixon does. Her resume shows 17 interim or consulting superintendent jobs since 2004. The districts include Montgomery ISD, June 20th, 2020 through August 2020, Red Oak ISD, July 19 to November 19, Pettus ISD, December 18 to March 19, Odom Edrow ISD, July 18th to October 18th, Hayes CISD, August 17 to 18. Two other things pop out when looking at her resume. The first is that her stint with Midland ISD could be the longest interim assignment in her career. Board President Rick Davis previously stated the board expects the interim superintendent to remain with the district through the remainder of the school year. The second thing is that this is not the first time her path has crossed with Orlando Riddick, Midland ISD's outgoing superintendent, who is currently on administrative leave. Dixon was interim superintendent at Cedar Hill ISD when that district hired Riddick in 2014. Her resume also lists participating in a superintendent search at Cedar Hill ISD. I am very impressed with the board's focus. They have a mission and will make sure all kids benefit from that vision, Dixon said in a press release. Midland ISD reported late Tuesday night that Dixon's first day is expected to be Monday. Dr. Dixon has demonstrated a track record of serving as a data-driven academic leader with a concentrated focus on supporting principals, teachers, and students at the campus level, Davis said in the release. After meeting in a closed session for more than 4.5 hours Monday, the board, by a 5-1 vote, approved a motion Monday to approve the appointment of Dixon as interim superintendent and authorize legal counsel to negotiate an agreement. Tommy Bishop was the lone vote against. John Trishitti III did not participate in the vote. We're very excited about Ms. Dixon, Davis said during the meeting. Ms. Dixon has a track record of success as an interim superintendent. She is a no-nonsense data analyzer that gets to the heart of the problem, is focused on academics, and we're excited that she has expressed an interest, and we now look forward to her service. We also think that she will be a tremendous benefit and help find a permanent superintendent. Dixon would be the second interim superintendent in the last 4 years. Rod Schroeder, the former superintendent of the Amarillo Independent School District, was the interim superintendent for the 2016-17 school year, before Riddick's arrival in Midland. We are not looking for merely a caretaker, but someone who will move us forward this school year, much like Rod Schroeder did for the 2016-17 school year, Davis said this weekend. We are interested in finding an academic leader like him who will focus on teaching and learning. The current acting superintendent is the district's chief financial officer, Darrell Dodds. This article is entitled, Myers, Next Week Will Determine If Case Numbers Are Going to Spike, by Stuart Doreen. Midland Health CEO Russell Myers said the next 7 days will be particularly crucial when it comes to determining if there will be an increase in the number of coronavirus cases after the Labor Day weekend. He said the 2-week incubation period associated with the virus ends Monday. He also said that more students are returning to campus. We still have reason for caution, Myers said. The holidays have been springboards to more cases in Midland County. There was a total of 5 cases from May 24th to the 30th. That number rose to 121 the week of June 14th to 20th. Following the July 4th holiday, coronavirus case count spiked to 418, a record in Midland County during the pandemic. The current metrics show a community on its best behavior when it comes to COVID-19. Last week, there were 79 cases, the fewest since the beginning of June, when cases were set to spike after the Memorial Day holiday. Myers also said the percentage of the 450 people testing positive at Midland health facilities fell to 7.9%. It's cautious optimism as of now, because we do continue to see hospitalizations decline and the number of the patients that we test is declining, Myers said. So pretty good, positive numbers lately, but we want to be sure that we avoid complacency. Myers said now is not the time to stop wearing masks and practicing social distancing and good personal hygiene. He also reminded Midland County residents that they should get their flu shot. We would encourage everyone to continue to do those things that we know have worked in reducing the spread of the virus, Myers said. Midland Memorial Hospital. Number of COVID inpatients, 9. Age range 30s to 90s. Ventilators. No COVID patients are on ventilators. Other notes. Myers said MMH's total census was 172 on Tuesday and that the emergency department saw 150 patients Monday, one of the highest numbers in a while. This article is entitled Midland Health CEO, Decision on COVID Vaccine is About What's Best for the Community, by Stuart Doreen. Will Midland Health CEO Russell Myers receive a coronavirus vaccine when one becomes available? He weighed in on that Tuesday during the hospital's weekly press conference. Myers ruled out taking a vaccine from the Russian government. I don't trust that one, he said. He said there are vaccines being developed by a variety of companies and that he believes the message from those companies and the Food and Drug Administration is that political pressure will not trump science. And we will be very cautious as a nation, I believe, in not rolling out a vaccine that's not ready, Myers said. Myers said there is a lot of political noise when it comes to a coronavirus vaccine and that when it's available, he will take advice from his medical colleagues. We will make decisions in the best interest of the community in terms of what we do here in the hospital, what we will promote, and I'll comply with those decisions as I would advise other people to do, Myers said. It's too soon to say whether there will be an effective vaccine, and we're going to try our best to understand the science. And when it's available and it's proven to be effective, then I will take one. This is the coronavirus page. This article is entitled City Reports 78th Death Related to Coronavirus, Midland Reporter-Telegram. The 78th Midland County resident has died of coronavirus-related issues, according to the City of Midland. The man in his 70s who was being treated at Midland Medical Lodge died Monday. He had underlying health conditions. The Midland Health Department reported Tuesday there are 26 new coronavirus cases, bringing the overall case count to 3,495. The health department also reported that the active number of cases stayed at 1,086 and the number of recoveries increased to 2,131, an increase of 20. Tuesday's cases are reflective of lab results from Sunday and Monday, according to the health department. Cases Monday 28, Tuesday 26, total this week 54. Number of cases through Tuesday of last week, 47. Total during pandemic, 3,495. This article is entitled MISD, Confirmed Employee Cases Up by 18. Midland Reporter-Telegram. The number of Midland ISD employees having tested positive for coronavirus since June 22nd is up to 72. The district's website reports four more were reported between Friday and Monday, including two at Emerson Elementary. None of the coronavirus cases required the district to close a campus. The Emerson Elementary cases were reported Monday and were the second and third during the pandemic at that campus. The other cases were at Lee Freshman, reported Saturday, and Midland High, reported Friday. There have been three at Midland High, all since September 4th. There have been four at Lee Freshman since July 15th. There have been 18 confirmed cases this month. Midland ISD has said that, quote, each notification triggers a series of steps which include sanitizing and disinfecting, notification of individuals in close proximity, and notification to the health department. Anytime we become aware of an individual with a confirmed case who was present at a public gathering, such as a board meeting or sporting event, we will also issue a press release, unquote. This is the local and state page. This article is entitled Cruz, Court Isn't Desire of My Heart, by Patrick Svitek, Texas Tribune. U.S. Senator Ted Cruz is making clear that he's not interested in serving on the U.S. Supreme Court, despite President Donald Trump recently naming him to a group of potential nominees. When Trump announced Cruz as part of the 20-name list September 9th, the senator issued a statement suggesting he was satisfied with remaining in Congress. He more explicitly said that he wasn't interested during a Fox News interview Sunday. "Do you want the job?" host Maria Bartiromo asked. "I don't," Cruz responded. "It is deeply honoring. It's humbling to be included in the list, but it's not the desire of my heart. I want to be in the political fight." Cruz, the former Solicitor General of Texas, has been mentioned before as a possible Supreme Court pick, and he's given a similar answer. He also said in 2016 that serving on the high court was not the desire of my heart. Trump also named a second Texan, James Ho, to his list of potential Supreme Court picks. Ho is a judge on the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals and former Texas Solicitor General. Cruz has written a book about the Supreme Court that is due out October 6th. Cruz promoted the book Monday as part of a tweet where he said, "Democrats were trying to steal the presidential race, responding to the newly reported formation of a legal operation focused on ensuring the integrity of the November election."
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Wednesday, September 16, 2020. Lacey Bavuset, owner of the Golden Whisk, shows off some of her treats Friday. The bakery opened a month ago at 3211 West Wadley Drive. App can connect Alzheimer's walkers. The Permian Basin Walk to End Alzheimer's event is planned for October 10, but will look different because of COVID-19. Past walks have always been a gathering of a large group of participants who then traverse a set course, said Julie Gray, Permian Basin Walk manager, in a press release. Instead, this year's walk participants can walk almost anywhere, in their neighborhoods, on walking trails, wherever they can keep safe social distancing and always wear a mask. Walkers will be able to connect through an app that will let them access information and resources from the Alzheimer's Association, participate in the local walk opening ceremony, follow a virtual walk path, track steps and distance, and manage Facebook fundraisers. The app can be downloaded now. To get links to Apple or Google downloads, go to bit.ly/32z5cit. To register for the walk, visit act.alz.org/walk or call 800-272-3900. Odessan wins Visit Midland staycation. Visit Midland, through its partnership with the Buy the Basin campaign last week, awarded the first staycation to Odessan Melissa Quiroz. Offered in the staycation is a one-night stay at Comfort Suites, 4 buy one get one tickets to the Petroleum Museum, a free meal at Gerardo's Casita, and the Visit Midland welcome package. Visit Midland introduced the staycation concept this summer as part of the Buy the Basin campaign to help encourage Permian Basin residents to visit local hotels, restaurants, nature centers, entertainment, and arts attractions in Midland. A second contest will run through September 30. The winner will be announced on October 5. Residents can enter to win on the Visit Midland Facebook page by liking the page and tagging a friend in the comments. Salvation Army to sign up angels. Salvation Army of Midland soon will be signing up children 12 and younger for the annual Angel Tree. Parents or legal guardians would need to provide valid ID, children's birth certificates, and proof of income. Signups will be 9 a.m. to noon and 1 to 4 p.m. October 5 through 16 at 600 East Wall Street. For more information, call 683-3614. Health Department is providing services. The Midland Health Department is providing clinical services by appointment only. Appointments will be scheduled from 8:15 a.m. to 3:45 p.m. Monday through Friday. In addition, the Health Department will have immunization clinic 8:15 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday. Appointments are required for immunizations. To schedule an appointment, call 681-7613. When it's open, Midland County Public Library, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday. Curbside pickup at Downtown Branch, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. Today in Midland history, In 2005, the Midland Rockhounds defeated the Arkansas Travelers in 4 games to win the franchise's first outright Texas League championship. Today in history. Today's Wednesday, September 16, the 260th day of 2020. There are 106 days left in the year. On this date, in 1994, a federal jury in Anchorage, Alaska, ordered Exxon Corps to pay $5 billion in punitive damages for the 1989 Exxon Valdez oil spill. The U.S. Supreme Court later reduced that amount to $507.5 million. In 2001, President George W. Bush, speaking on the South Lawn of the White House, said there was no question Osama bin Laden and his followers were the prime suspects in the September 11 attacks. Bush pledged the government would find them, get them running, and hunt them down. In 2007, O.J. Simpson was arrested in the alleged armed robbery of a sports memorabilia collector's in Las Vegas. Simpson was later convicted of kidnapping and armed robbery and sentenced to 9 to 33 years in prison. He was released in 2017. Today's birthdays. Country singer-songwriter Phil Lee is 69. Baseball Hall of Famer Robin Yount is 65. Magician David Copperfield is 64. Country singer-songwriter Terry McBride is 62. Retired MLB pitcher Orel Hershiser is 62.
This is the opinion page. This column is called Opinion Extra. It is entitled Vaccine Could Slow Down Job Growth by Carl W. Smith, Bloomberg Opinion. Falling cases of the coronavirus imply that the U.S. economy could improve over the next month or two as lockdowns ease and the Americans resume their normal lives. There is, however, an unexpected short-term risk that a vaccine will be ready by November. To be absolutely clear, over the medium and long term, a vaccine will be a godsend for economic growth. Even if it weren't, a lower death rate is well worth a few more quarters of higher unemployment. Nonetheless, there is a possibility that the introduction of a vaccine could actually lead to a sharp, if temporary, deceleration in job growth. Here's why. As it now stands, there is no end to the pandemic in sight. While the numbers are currently improving in many parts of the U.S., there could easily be a surge of infections in the winter. After that, it's anyone's guess. Even the more optimistic estimates suggest that the U.S. would have to endure several more waves before the entire country reached herd immunity. As a result, businesses and families have tried to find ways to plow through, adjusting to what is for the time being the new normal. A minority have even refused to abide by vague shutdown orders. A vaccine would change all of that, setting a target date for everything to be over. For those considering returning to the office or school, a vaccine would provide a definitive answer to the question, if not now, when? A vaccine would also create an obvious standard for those who should be allowed back to work, those who've been vaccinated. While there is a robust debate about who should get a vaccine first, logic dictates that first responders and medical personnel will be among them. Then it would go to essential workers, however defined across the economy. It's likely that non-essential workers and school children would come close to last, so the mere discovery of a vaccine wouldn't necessarily end the current shutdown of businesses and schools. Those reopenings would depend on the widespread distribution of a vaccine. Experts are uncertain about how long that would take, but it could easily be months. While America is waiting for the vaccine to get distributed, job growth is likely to grind to a halt. Those who are already employed will likely stay employed, but it will be hard for employers to justify bringing anyone who has not been vaccinated into the workplace. Likewise, many school districts will demand that children get vaccinated before returning to school. These two conditions, the reluctance of business to hire and schools to reopen, will severely limit how rapidly employment can expand through the end of this year and into the beginning of the next. As a result, the U.S. economy might need another round of stimulus to get through the vaccination process. And here there is reason for optimism. While an imminent vaccine might temporarily freeze the economy, it should have the opposite effect on Congress. Free of fear that it would be making the kind of open-ended commitments that it did during the first rounds of stimulus, Congress could quickly pass a relief bill. In Washington and elsewhere, politicians and public officials should be prepared for the perverse possibility that a vaccine would bring not only hope, but also hardship, at least temporarily, for many workers. Even after a vaccine is found, Americans struggling to get by will still need assistance. This column is distributed by Tribune Content Agency. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, September 16, 2020. Fat Albert Price. Albert Fat Albert Price, age 71, passed away September 10, 2020 in Odessa, Texas. He was born October 27, 1948 in La Mesa, Texas, to the late Albert and Hattie Price. Albert is preceded in death by his parents, daughter Katrina Shaw, and special nephew Quincy Price, siblings Roy Price, Ella May, Dora May, and Gladys May. Albert is survived by his son, Dimitri Price, and Albert Tinky Gary, and David Shaw, special nephews Alan Price and LaFora Spain, special nieces Ola May Dobbins and Barbara Johnson, grandchildren Ashley Haven, Dashana Shaw, David Shaw III, and Davian Shaw, and a host of great-grandchildren. Visitation will be held on Thursday, September 17th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home. Service will be held on Friday, September 18th, 10 a.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home with Pastor Darren Willis officiating. Floral arrangements, cards, etc. may be sent to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery and Funeral Home. Hallie Loy McCarter. Hallie Loy McCarter passed away peacefully on September 12, 2020. She was born in 1934 in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, to Lurleen Milliken Loy and O. Fred Loy. Survivors include her sons, Kevin McCarter of Uruguay, Jamie McCarter and wife Margie and family of Midland, Texas, Sean McCarter of Castle Rock, Colorado, and sister-in-law Sandra Loy and two nephews, Stephen and wife Shari Loy and Cliff Loy of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. She was preceded in death by her husband of 56 years, E. Dale McCarter, her younger brother, O. Fred Loy, of Baton Rouge, her niece, Leslie Lurleen Loy, and Kelly Ann Mobley McCarter, wife of her youngest son, Sean. A visitation will be held at the Nally Picklin Wells Funeral Home in Midland on Thursday, September 17th from 4 to 6 p.m. A memorial service will be held at the First United Methodist Church in Midland on Friday, September 18th at 10 a.m. Internment alongside the ashes of her husband, E. Dale McCarter, will occur at a future date in Deerford, Louisiana, in the Tucker Cemetery, where five generations of her ancestors are buried. The family requests memorials be directed to the Hospice of Midland, P.O. Box 2621, Midland, Texas, 79702. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Picklin Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. James Richard Kettle. James Richard Kettle made his final departure on September 12, 2020, after an extended illness. He passed in his own time, his own way, and, of course, 5 o'clock somewhere. He was born on May 30, 1965, to parents Kenneth and Sue Kettle in Odessa and spent most of his adult life in Odessa and Midland, except for 2 to 3 years in Lubbock. He is survived by his mother, Sue Kettle, sister Cheryl Kettle Goswick, husband Jim, son Jeff Kettle, and daughter Catherine Kettle. James had many cousins and cherished friends. He was preceded in death by his dad, Kenneth E. Kettle, and his paternal and maternal grandparents. Special thanks to Greg and Trina Cambino for being there any time of the day or night. Also to Home Instead, Home Hospice, and Tricia Bain. Services will be held at the CAF Hangar, 9612 Wright Drive, Midland, Texas, at 11 a.m. on Thursday, September 17th. In lieu of flowers, please send donations to Home Hospice, CAF High Sky Wing, or a charity of your choice. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory. Norberto Franco Martinez. Beloved husband, father, and grandfather, Norberto Martinez, died Wednesday, September 9th, 2020, at the age of 95. Norberto was born in Vado de Piedra, Chihuahua, Mexico, on June 6, 1925, to Refugio Martinez and Juliana Franco. He was preceded in death by his wife, Angelita Martinez, and his daughter, Patsy Martinez. He is survived by his daughters, Minnie Armendariz and Jesse Rodriguez, his son, Edward Martinez, and his many cherished grandchildren. His viewing will be held Thursday, September 17th from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. His rosary will take place Thursday evening at 7 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. His farewell celebration mass will be held on Friday, September 18th at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Shrine. Funeral service is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin at nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. Pete Dominguez Cordova. Pete was born on September 9, 1940, in Shafter, Texas, to Merced and Nicolasa Cordova. He is survived by his wife Esther, brother Samuel Cordova, sons Pete Jr., Vicky, Denny Arcelia, and Michael Sutherland, daughters Belinda, Rudy Granado, Brenda, Sonia, Armando Marin, as well as 14 grandchildren and 13 great-grandchildren. He was preceded in death by his parents, Merced and Nicolasa Cordova, and his brother, Merced Sonny Cordova. Viewing will be held at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home and Chapel, 405 North Terrell, Midland, 79701, Wednesday, September 16th, from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. There will also be a family tribute for friends and family on Wednesday, September 16th at 7 p.m. at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home and Chapel. Funeral services will be held Thursday, September 17th at 10 a.m., also at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home and Chapel. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Reception will be held at Pueblo Viejo, 104 South Terrell, in Midland at 1 p.m. The family would like to thank Heart to Heart Hospice, the Midland Fire Department Community Health Program, and the Alzheimer's Association for their assistance during this difficult time. In lieu of flowers, the family requests donations be made to the Alzheimer's Association or Heart to Heart Hospice Midland. Funeral service is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be made to email pipkin at nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. Richard Cortez. Richard Cortez passed away peacefully in his home on September 7, 2020, in Midland, Texas, at the age of 72. Richard is survived by his mother, Dora Cortez, his four daughters, Christine Mata, Angela Ingle, Valerie Cortez, and Sabrina Cortez, his son-in-law, Jeffrey Mata, grandchildren, Amy Mata and Jeffrey Mata Jr., great-granddaughter, Cameron Sissel, all of Odessa, his sisters, Connie Delgado, Lydia Cortez, Yolanda Herrera, Rosie Silva, Elvia Munoz, Francis Hernandez, Brenda Cortez, and Lisa Cortez, and one brother, Martin Cortez, Jr. Richard is survived by many nieces, nephews, and extended family. He is preceded in death by his father, Martin Cortez, sisters Hope Cortez, Sylvia Bustos, Paula McAwayak, and Hortensia Mancha. Visitation is scheduled for Wednesday, September 16th, 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. at Odessa Funeral Home, with a rosary at 7 p.m. Services will be at 10 a.m. Thursday, September 17th, at St. Anthony's Catholic Church, with Father Chavez officiating. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery. Trinidad Guevara Gonzalez. Trinidad Guevara Gonzalez, 71, of Midland, passed away September 10, 2020. Visitation will be held on Tuesday, September 15th, at 9 a.m. till 9 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home, with a Holy Rosary being recited at 7 p.m. Funeral Mass will be held on Wednesday, September 16th at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine at 10 a.m. Interment will be held on Thursday, September 17th at Fairview Cemetery at 10 a.m. Trinidad is preceded in death by her son, Romaldo Gonzalez Jr., and her sister, Hermila Guevara. She is survived by her husband, Romaldo Gonzalez, son, Eric Gonzalez, sisters, Maria de Jesus Guevara, Reyes Guevara Dorado, Julieta Guevara Natividad, Hortensia Guevara, brothers Hector Manuel Guevara, Espetacion Guevara, Ramon Guevara, granddaughter Alia Gonzalez, and great-grandson Zavin Mihango. Arrangements are under the direction of Avalos, Sanchez, and Thomas Funeral Home. Antonio Martinez Lujan. Antonio Martinez Lujan, 64, of Odessa, passed from this life on September 8, 2020. He was born to the late Frederico and Otilia Lujan on March 18, 1956, in Balmoray, Texas. He is survived by his siblings, Raimondo Lujan, Frederick Lujan, Sylvia McFall, Laura Valenzuela, Barbara Lujan, and Ann Lujan. He was a veteran of the United States Army. A memorial service will be held Friday, September 18th, 2 p.m. at American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland. Dr. James Bolton will be officiating. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory. Death notices. David R. Valverde. David R. Valverde, 78, of Midland, passed away September 14, 2020. Viewing will be from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. Wednesday, September 16th at the Branch at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home in Midland. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Thursday, September 17th at Elevate Church in Midland, with interment following at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Floy Colleen Riggins Todd. Floy Colleen Riggins Todd, 76, passed away September 13, 2020. Visitation will be on Thursday, September 17, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home in Midland. Funeral services will be at Kelview Heights Baptist Church on Friday, September 18th at 11 a.m., with graveside services to follow at 3 p.m. at Mount Olive Cemetery in Big Spring. Survivors include children Kevin Todd and Karen LeBlanc. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
Hello, this is Michael. I'm reading the Odessa American front page for Wednesday, September 16th, 2020. Council makes it official. Taxes are going up along with rates. By Michael Merlo. The Odessa City Council approved the second and final vote to raise water, sewer, and solid waste rates by 2.5% during a Tuesday morning work session at the Marriott Hotel and Convention Center. Council also voted to raise the 2020 tax rate to 0.477115 cents per $100 property valuation for municipal maintenance, operations, and debt service, which is a $0.000514 or 0.11% increase of the current $0.476601 tax rate. All of the council members voted to raise the rates and the tax rate, except for District 2 council member Dewey Bryant, who was not present during the work session. Bryant previously voted for the higher tax rates along with other city council members during a September 8th meeting. Assistant City Manager of Administrative Services, Cindy Muncy, said that the change in rates of sewer and water is due to the deteriorating water and sewer lines. Our water mains are needing to be replaced, so all of these things are adding up, and we've recently gone through some master plans that's highlighted the areas that's most critical, and we need to start working on those areas so that we're replacing instead of having breaks and having to come in on an emergency basis, she said in an interview. Muncy said that water and sewer will raise about $1.3 million in additional revenue, and the city added an additional $3 million to their budget to work on repairing and replacing water and sewer lines, including some that are reportedly over 45 years old. Munsey said that the city made budget cuts to make up for the other portion of the $3 million. She added the city will make about $360,000 from the solid waste rate, which was raised because of increased landfill tipping fees. Munsey said that the reason property taxes are a slight increase from the prior rate is because there has been a decrease in overall evaluations. While the residential real estate values increased, commercial values decreased, she detailed. The council determined that we should go with the no new revenue rate this year due to the economy in the area. We could have gone to the voter approval rate, which would have been slightly higher. Rates will reportedly go into effect on October 1st. District 5 Councilmember Mary Willis said during the meeting that she understands that times are hard because she also has to pay water, sewer, and trash bills, and added that raising the rates now is better than waiting. If we have to do it later, it just doubles the cost, and so that's even more that we have to pay, she said. At-large Councilmember Peggy Dean urged citizens to look at the master plans on the city website because they explain the need for the rate increases. Council also voted to amend the Water Conservation and Drought Contingency Plan and voted to purchase public safety laptops and equipment for $268,732. Ector County trials resume. Dumping enforcement bolstered, taxes raised. The Ector County courts are back in business. County commissioners voted unanimously Tuesday to move county and district court trials to Building G on the north side of the County Coliseum at 42nd Street and North Grant Avenue, saying expenses will be drawn from the $2.6 million the county got in May under the Federal Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security CARES Act. Shut down since March by the COVID-19 pandemic, the county's five district courts and two courts at law may begin trying cases with 12 and 6-member juries after the necessary safety precautions are taken with masks, face shields, and 6-foot social distancing in the 24,000-square-foot building, officials said. Precinct 1 Commissioner Eddie Shelton said 244th District Court Judge James Rush was taking the lead to help arrange the influx of large pools of prospective jurors and schedule the prosecutions of felony defendants. County Attorney Dusty Gallivan said Monday that he wouldn't bring any misdemeanor cases to court until the new year. Precinct 3 Commissioner Dale Childers noted that Judge Rush's plan must be approved by 318th District Court Judge Dean Rucker of Midland, who is the presiding judge of the 7th Administrative Judicial Region of Texas. Precinct 2 Commissioner Greg Simmons took part in the special 10 a.m. meeting remotely. Gallivan said his office had continued having pretrial motions, guilty pleas, arraignments, and probation revocations, while District Attorney Bobby Bland said he had kept convening grand juries, issuing indictments, holding hearings, and taking guilty pleas during the cessation of trials. In other business Tuesday, the court discussed adding two trash collectors to the Environmental Enforcement Department to use a new truck and remove garbage left by illegal dumpers in Precincts 1 and 4, the western and southeastern sides of the county. However, the commissioners voted unanimously to leave the collectors in Highways and Streets Director Evan Kesey's Public Works Department. They said Environmental Enforcement Director Ricky George will seek work orders from Kesey to have the men remove trash strewn by unapprehended dumpers, which George said accounts for 70% of the problem. I think they'll always have work to do, Shelton said. I can see them working 8 hours a day, every day, added Judge Debbie Hayes. Hayes said criminals serving probated sentences might be required to help, although only the county employees have commercial driver's licenses and may drive the truck. I wish we could catch more than we do, but unfortunately, like with most crime, more get away than are caught, George said. Hayes reported that Health Department Director Brandy Garcia is getting a new device to test for COVID and other ailments, and she needs a laboratory technician to operate it. Childers motion passed to hire a technician to start working part-time in January after he said, "I don't want to tie up a nurse doing lab tests." Hayes said Garcia's department has definitely played an important role in keeping COVID under control and keeping the death rate down in our community. The second half of the meeting was held to consider long-range planning, tabled items, and policy matters preparatory to the court scheduled September 22nd final approval of the county's 2020-21 budget. The new ad valorem tax rate of 36.9 cents per $100 in valuation, an increase from the current fiscal year's 36.5, was enacted August 25th, with property appraisals in most of the county having jumped and with homeowners bracing for bigger tax bills.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Wednesday, September 16th, 2020. Section A. Teachers Powering Through Pandemic by Ruth Campbell. Even with decades of teaching experience, Odessa High School biology instructor Karen Wilson and her daughter, chemistry teacher Brittany Rainey, are facing challenges this year, juggling virtual and in-person students. Students also have a lot on their minds with school, work, job loss, and the pandemic. Wilson has been in Odessa since 1988. She taught in Sierra Blanca and Marble Falls. When they moved to Odessa, Wilson worked for an oil company for 10 years. She was due to be transferred to Houston, but decided she didn't want to go. "I decided to stay in Odessa, and I decided to teach again because I always liked it. I loved the kids. The kids made teaching what it is," Wilson said. Although she doesn't physically see many of her students these days, Wilson said she still has contact with them. "When the bell rings, I have to be a Google Meet with them. So we sit down and we try to establish that contact. When COVID-19 came on in the spring, the teachers knew their students. We knew a lot of what they struggled with, and we knew a lot of what their strengths and weaknesses were. So to pick up and do virtual was, for some classes, easier than others because you knew what the students were capable of," Wilson said. "Right now, we know the students who are in our class. We have a list, and we've established some contact through the Gmail, but we don't know our kids. We don't know their strengths and weaknesses because we don't know what they're capable of." ECISD Chief Innovation Officer Jason Osborne said Wilson is a champion teacher who is always willing to go the extra mile for her school. "Watching her engage with her class is not only inspiring, it makes me want to be one of her students. Every conversation we have together leads to ideas on how we can better serve ECISD. Karen is the epitome of a team player, an asset to our district," Osborne said in a text message. Wilson teaches about 150 students in the International Baccalaureate Diploma Program. She teaches Biology 2 Advanced Placement, dual credit with Odessa College, junior and senior year IB, and a section of honors biology. Being in the science building, Wilson said the teachers work together to help their students achieve success in subjects like biology and chemistry. "Although some have said teachers took the spring and summer off, Wilson and Rainey said that's not so. Both prepared all summer for an expected virtual fall semester, and they did it on their own time. Rainey said she used to take a conference period, but now she doesn't. She added that students message them at 2 and 3 a.m. "There's no stopping point," Wilson said. "You could literally work 24 hours a day." Last year, Wilson said one of the assignments she gave to students was comparing the Spanish flu, 1918 to 1920, with COVID. They had a couple of options of what they could do as an assignment, and one of the options was to just sit down and tell me how COVID impacted them, and those were tearjerkers. "I was in tears," Wilson said. She had one student who was accepted to Texas Tech University, but the student's parents lost their jobs. She had another student who had both parents lose their jobs, and every morning they would get in a truck with a water tank hooked behind it and wash vehicles. I've had some who were the babysitter because their parents could no longer afford daycare, Wilson said. Rainey had a student who had hours added to their shift and was working more now than ever. So our kids have a lot of challenges, Wilson said. Kai Hamilton bull rushes his way to the top. Alpine. New rankings were released by the Professional Rodeo Cowboys Association, PRCA, Ram World Standings for the top bull riders worldwide. A household Sol Ross name sits directly across from the number one slot, Kai Hamilton. It may come as a surprise to some, but it does not come as any sort of surprise to those like head rodeo coach C.J. Aragon, who have seen this young phenom burst his way into the top of the bull riding scene with his own brand of Queensland tenacity, style, and flash. To put this in perspective, according to PRCA, he unseats Sage Kimsey, who had previously sat atop the world standing leaderboards in bull riding in September every single year from 2014 to 2019. In each of those years, Kimsey would go on to claim the world championship. Kimsey has never trailed in September once during his run. Hamilton becomes the first rookie bull rider to be at the top of the leaderboards in September since 2014. The last rookie to do that? You guessed it. Sage Kimsey, back in 2014 when he won his first title. This is one of many exclamation points and highlights that Aragon and his burgeoning program have added to this university's already storied rodeo tradition. This also isn't the first time Sol Ross Rodeo has been brought into the spotlight in 2020. Hamilton's ascension comes on the heels of already heading into an expectations-laden rodeo season with the Sol Ross program ranked as one of the best in the country. Furthermore, former Lobo legends Tuff Hedeman and Cody Lambert were enshrined as inductees into the National Cowboy Museum Rodeo Hall of Fame not even a month ago. Unseating Kimsey is only the beginning. The usurpation of an equal who has held the title and the standings at the top for the better part of a decade as only a rookie is impressive, yes. But Hamilton doesn't simply want to be announced as number one in September. He has his eyes locked solely on being number one in the world for a long, long time. Obituaries and death notices for Wednesday, September 16th. Richard Cortez. Richard Cortez passed away in his home September 7th in Midland at the age of 72. He is survived by his mother, Dora Cortez, four daughters, Christine Mata, Angela Ingle, Valerie Cortez, and Sabrina Cortez, son-in-law, Jeffrey Mata, two grandchildren, and one great-granddaughter, sisters Connie Delgado, Lydia Cortez, Yolanda Herrera, Rosie Silva, Elvia Munoz, Francis Hernandez, Brenda Cortez, and Lisa Cortez, and one brother, Martin Cortez. He also is survived by many nieces and nephews and extended family. He is preceded in death by his father, Martin Cortez, sisters Hope Cortez, Sylvia Bustos, Paula Makowiak, and Hortensia Mancha. Richard was born June 16th in Elmendorf, Texas. Visitation is scheduled for Wednesday, September 16th from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. at Odessa Funeral Home with Rosary at 7 p.m. Services will be at 10 a.m. Thursday, September 17th at St. Anthony's Catholic Church with Father Chavez officiating. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery. Guadalupe Y. Garza. Guadalupe Ibarra Garza passed away September 10th in Odessa. Visitation was held Tuesday, September 15th, and will be held Wednesday, September 16th at the family home, 2210 East 14th in Odessa. Funeral Mass will be celebrated at 1 p.m. Thursday, September 17th at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Church in Odessa, with Father Mark officiating, and burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery. Guadalupe was born November 16th, 1948, in Slayton to Tibercio Davis Ibarra and Manuela G. Ibarra. She married Gilbert E. Garza in 1969, and they have 5 children. She is survived by her husband of 51 years, Gilbert, daughters Christina A. Sainz and husband Raymond, Corina D. Garza, fiancé Jonathan Peach, Debbie D. Roundtree and husband Micha, Patricia L. Hines and husband Orlando, son Gilbert A. Garza and wife Corona, and wife Christina Garza, brothers Tibucio Ibarra Jr. and wife Gracie, Johnny Ibarra and wife Lucy Chavez Ibarra, Mike Ibarra and wife Loli Ibarra, David Ibarra and wife Charlie, 13 grandchildren, 11 great-grandchildren, and a host of nieces and nephews. Antonio Martinez Lujan. Antonio Martinez Lujan, 64, of Odessa, passed away September 8th. He was born to the late Frederico and Otilia Lujan, March 18th, 1956, in Balmoray. He is survived by his siblings, Raimundo Lujan, Frederick Lujan, Sylvia McFall, Laura Valenzuela, Barbara Lujan, and Ann Lujan. A memorial service will be held Friday, September 18th at 2 p.m. at American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland, with Dr. James Bolton officiating. James Richard Kettle. James Richard Kettle passed away September 12th after an extended illness. He was born May 30th, 1965, to parents Kenneth and Sue Kettle in Odessa. He is survived by his mother, Sue Kettle, sister Cheryl Kettle Goswick, and husband Jim, son Jeff Kettle, and daughter Catherine Kettle, as well as many cousins. He was preceded in death by his father, Kenneth E. Kettle, and his paternal and maternal grandparents. Services will be at the CAF Hangar in Midland, Thursday, September 17th. In lieu of flowers, please send donations to Home Hospice, CAF High Sky Wing, or a charity of your choice. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory. Ray Parsons. Ray Parsons, 92, of Marble Falls, passed away September 12th. She was born September 3rd, 1928, in Bowlegs, Oklahoma, to Jesse and Lucille Story Barber. She married Cheryl Buster Pratt Parsons in 1953. Irma Ellen Hobgood Ham. Irma Ellen Ham, 78, of Odessa, passed away Saturday, September 12th. She was born November 5th, 1941, in Brownfield, to the late Robert Charles and Ruby Ray Reddy Hobgood. She married Boyd Ham in Lubbock in 1960. Surviving her are her husband of 60 years, Boyd Ham of Odessa, Christopher Ray Ham and wife Karen of Plymouth, Minnesota, and Robert F. Ham and wife Zina of Humble, daughter Joyce Bueller of Odessa, sister Judy Ray Hobgood Gleaves and husband Dwight of Pipe Creek, Texas, as well as 6 grandchildren, and 2 great-grandchildren. She was preceded in death by her parents and a brother, Charles Ray Hobgood. Arrangements are entrusted to Acres West Funeral Chapel, and condolences to the family may be sent online at acreswestfuneral.com. Albert Price, Jr. Albert, Fat Albert Price, 71, passed away September 10th in Odessa. He was born October 27th, 1948, in La Mesa, to the late Albert and Hattie Price. He is preceded in death by his parents, a daughter, Katrina Shaw, and a special nephew, Quincy Price, and siblings Roy Price, Ella May, Dora May, and Gladys May. Albert is survived by his son, Dimitri Price, and Albert Tinky, Gary, and David Shaw, some special nephews and nieces, 4 grandchildren, and a host of great-grandchildren. Visitation will be held Thursday, September 17th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home. The service will be held Friday, September 18th at American Heritage Funeral Home with Pastor Darren Willis officiating. Floral arrangements and cards, etc., may be sent to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory. Death notices. Graciela G. Carrasco. Graciela G. Carrasco, 66, died Friday, September 11th in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Patrick Neil Carter. Patrick Neil Carter, 66, of Midland, died Sunday, September 13th. A celebration of life is scheduled for 9:30 a.m. September 19th at Odessa Christian Faith Center. Arrangements are by Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Arvel Lee Murphy. Arvel Lee Murphy, 69, of Odessa, died Tuesday, September 8th. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Eulalia Navarrete. Eulalia Navarrete, 92, died Monday, September 14th in Midland. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Elsie L. Partridge. Elsie I. Partridge, 94, of Odessa, died Monday, September 14th. A celebration of life is scheduled for 2 p.m. Thursday, September 17th at St. Mary's Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens with Father Bernard Garrigan officiating. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. Dolores E. Stevens Shackelford. Dolores E. Stevens Shackelford, 78, of Odessa, died Sunday, September 13th. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Roberto R. Villarreal. Roberto R. Villarreal, 90, of Odessa, died Sunday, September 13th. Mass will be celebrated at 1 p.m. September 18th at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens with Father Mark Woodruff officiating. Anna Rita Rausch Vincent. Anna Rita Rausch Vincent, 77, of El Reno, Oklahoma, died Saturday, September 12th in Oklahoma City. A graveside service is scheduled for 10 a.m. September 17th at Lukaba Cemetery in Lukaba, Oklahoma. Arrangements are by Yanda and Son Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Yukon, Oklahoma.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.